Accession number 20520, Reel 1.
Major Rowley, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Mount Abu, Rajputana, India.
Which year was this?
1922.
Can you tell me the background to your having been born in Rajputana, please?
My father was in the British Army, and he was serving with the 1st Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment. And he was there from 1936 until 1928. Is that all right? Can you take it out? Or?
Oh, no, we don't need to do that.
Oh, you don't?
Do you have memories of being a child in India?
I have hardly any real memories. The most important memory of all, which I live on with my grandchildren, is that Amy Johnson, the famous lady aviator, on her first trip to Britain, from Britain to Australia, landed in Allahabad for refueling. My father was put in charge of looking after her and arranging for her food and having a bath and all that sort of thing, and I was allowed to sit in her cockpit, which was photographed, and I haven't got the photograph now because I've given it to my granddaughters, but I remember that as if it were yesterday. Otherwise, I have memories. I was 7 when I came back from England. I remember the chowkidars. I remember the parades, but I don't have any real memory of it. But I have very, very fortunately been able to go back to Mount Abu in Rajputana, which is now Rajasthan, in 1979, when I was kindly taken by the Indian government up to Mount Abu, to the hospital where I was born, to visit the broken down church where I was christened, and I was absolutely flabbergasted by the whole thing. But no, India in that time, of my younger age, is not very good. Of course, I went back to India when I was 18, when I joined the Indian Army.
Did you have an ayah?
Oh, yes. Probably more than one, because we weren't always in Allahabad. They moved around in various places where the regiments were being moved.
How did the ayahs treat you as far as you
were? Oh, marvellously, marvellously. And I've always used the fact that I was born in India as being one of the reasons why I'm so well uneducated. I went to several schools in several places. I wasn't very keen on school, I have to admit. When we came back from India to England for the first time, my father and the regiment were sent off to China. And so we came back just with my mother. I always rather hated being moved around from every school I could think of. But I packed it in when I was 13, and I haven't been to school since, except I have been to a military sort of schools, but I packed it in. And I started my life as a working for the Remington Typewriter Company when I was 13 and 9 months, and I remember it was an extremely sort of important part of my life because I got £26 a year salary, which without a bit of backing from my family wouldn't have lasted. It made me last very long, but I always managed to say that where to answer your question, where was I educated, you know, and that sort of thing. I say, well, Well, as a matter of fact, I've been educated almost over all over the world. But I haven't any education at all, really, not to show anyway on paper.
Did you have the job with Remington in England?
Yes, I did. I had I was with them for 12 months, and I must admit it wasn't very illuminating, but at least it was doing something which was what I wanted to do, and I didn't want to do what my father wanted me to do, which was to go into the army as a boy soldier. To learn elementary sorts of stuff. And I thought, no, I didn't like that. I left the Remington typewriter company. I applied for a job as junior clerk in the town clerk's department in the city of Worcester. And that was a great attraction because it was £39 a year, as opposed to 26, which was a big uplift. But when I went for an interview, I had an absolute horror to find myself sitting with a whole bunch of King's School boys who had done what I suppose is now called the equivalent of A-level, who had also applied for this job, and I realised that I was not really going to make very much progress, and if it weren't for the fact that I was there, I would have run away. But I, because they were there with their school ties and their blazers, and I was with my trousers and a tweed jacket, and I didn't really fit. However, it so happened that I was there, so I went in for an interview along with these other chaps, and the town clerk was doing his own interviewing. And he happened to have been in World War One. He also happened to have had some association with the Worcestershire Regiment, which was my father's regiment in World War One. He had a terrible piece of his head knocked out with shrapnel, and he had a tin lid on it. And he was a very tetchy sort of chap, and he looked at me and he said, "Where do you come from?" And I said, "Well, my father, you know this." And he said, "Where were you educated?" I said, "Well, I've been educated all over the world." And he said, right. And I was sort of disappeared. I went out, and that was the end of my interview. And to my complete astonishment, I was invited to go back, and he said, "You got the job," which was a big lift for me. Which at that point, I was now getting on towards being 16. I was 15 and a bit, but I was getting on towards 16. When I was 16, he encouraged me to join the Territorial Army, which I did as a boy soldier. I got to know him terribly well. In fact, he looked after me as if I were his son. We became enormous friends. He used to have the most terrible headaches sometimes when he was unspeakable, and nobody could deal with him except me. I was always called in to deal with the town clerk when he had this very awful migraine from this bullet in his head. And we became real long life friends. He not only encouraged me to go into the Territorial Army, but he was determined to turn me into a barrister. He was going to get me out of being a junior clerk. He was going to arrange for me to go to school and learn and all the rest of it, which I thought was really rather a waste of time, but he was quite keen about it. I was being prepared to stop being a junior clerk and go off back to school, which I never did because as a territorial, I was obviously active. I enjoyed the weekends and the things. I became a motor transport driver as opposed to a drummer boy, which is what I was called Boy Rowley. I combined a very interesting job with the town clerk. I learned a lot, and I was being prepared for a lot. But I also learned that the army wasn't a bad idea after all, especially as I was able to drive a motor car and a motor truck and a Bren gun carrier when I was still 16. And I had the extraordinary experience of when I was 17, I went to the post office to get a form to apply for a provisional license, which I got. I went straight back to the regimental headquarters, where there was the transport officer, who issued me with a driving license pass document, saying that I was a completely qualified driver, MT driver, lorry driver, you name it. And I went back to the same police post office half an hour later to get my full license. And the post office was totally mystified by this. They said, but you only just got your probation thing. I said, well, I'm sorry, but this is, I've passed all my things. I'm in the army now, you know. And they had no option. I got a full driving license on the same day as I was 17. Which was a marvellous idea. I mean, I liked that very much. That same year, when I was 17, 1939, coming up now, I had my 17th birthday, which was very good because I changed from 1 shilling a day pay as a boy soldier to 2 shillings a day full army private soldier. And we went out and did our camp in Lagershald and that sort of thing, and we were there in August 1939, and we were mobilised.
Which unit of tier was it?
7th Battalion of the Worcestershires. And instead of going back to being a town clerk's chap, I was now in the army, regular. And my battalion, even before the war had been declared on the 3rd of September, on about the 28th or 29th of August, my battalion went straight from Lugershall, straight to Dover, to join the British Expeditionary Force, which was already being prepared because the war was obviously inevitable. And on my way, driving my 1500-weight comma, with great excitement, going to war seemed to be a rather pleasant idea, as far as I was concerned. We were in a column driving to Dover to go across the channel, and unfortunately the adjutant turned up on his motorbike and told me to get out of my lorry, my 1500-weight comma, which I'm very fond of. He said, you can't go, you're too young, you've got to stay behind, which was very disagreeable from my point of view. I hated it. But I was now in the army, and so I was taken back, and the war had now started, war declared, and I was taken back to the Worcester depot and joined the 8th Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment Territorial. And I, instead of being allowed to drive my motor cars and things, they made me a quartermaster's clerk, which I disliked very much. It was not my idea of what soldiering was about. But I had to do it, and I did it for a few months, and then one very dark night the regiment was moved and we didn't know where we were going, and we landed up in Northern Ireland. And I was there, the quartermaster's clerk, and I found myself doing the quartermaster's job and everybody else's quartermaster's job because the others were either not paying attention or chasing women or something. I began to hate being quartermaster's clerk. And then one day I saw in the Army Council's instructions a thing which said that officer cadets were being looked for to join the Indian Army. and volunteers may apply, provided they're under the age of 18 and 9 months. But being it was in Ireland, it was a reprint by the Northern Ireland headquarters, and it said quite distinctly that candidates may be under the age of 18 and 9 months. And I knew that that was a misprint, but I thought, well, I'll have a go. And I formed up and said to the adjutant, I wish to apply to become an officer cadet to go to India, to join the Indian Army. And after a lot of disagreeable, say you can't do this and we can't do that and all the rest of it, I said, well, you haven't even made me a Lance Corporal because I'm too young, so I pushed him off to join a real army. And that was rather silly of me to say that, because he was not very best pleased. But anyway, I said, you can't stop me from applying. He said, no, I can't. So I went to an interview, and I was asked all sorts of questions. But the main question was, why do you want to join the Indian Army? And I said, well, I was born in Mount Abu, and I want to go back, you know. And that seemed to do the trick. They didn't ask me anything else. Didn't notice I was under the age that I should have been for being a cadet. And to my absolute delight, I was chosen to go and become a cadet. And I joined a whole bunch of many others, cadets, in Aldershot. We had a long journey out to India, because the canal was now closed, and it was a miserable journey. We were in a meat ship, but I didn't mind about that. And I eventually arrived in India in a very early part of end of 1940. I went to Cadet College, Bangalore, where I did my officer cadet training. I was commissioned on the 10th of July, 1941. I was sent to join the 5th Battalion of the Baluch Regiment, which was that time stationed in Landikotal in the Khyber Pass, Northwest Frontier Province. And I was absolutely tickle pink. I had applied to join the Rajputana Rifles, being as how I'd been born in Rajputana. But it's not much point asking chaps where you want to go. You'll get sent where they want you to go. As it turned out, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I arrived in Landikotal to join this very well-known and well-loved battalion of the Baluch Regiment, to find myself the first what we called ECOs, Emergency Commissioned Officers, but I also found myself joining a decimated officer cadre in charge of the 5th Battalion. This was all because pre-war, the 5th Battalion was an Indianized battalion, and instead of having Indian warrant officers, namely subedars and jemadars, they had, like the British Army, second lieutenants, first lieutenants, and captains, all of them being Indians who'd been to the Dehradun Cadet College. It was a form of trying to translate the old Imperial British Army into an army getting ready for consequent freedom of India. It was even in 1939, that sort of time, they were preparing for India to become India at that time, to become a self-governing Commonwealth country. As a result of which, there were a large number of very good Indian officers, a lot of very good Indian officers, and hardly any white-faced British officers. But the war had come, and that meant immediately that there are many, many more battalions required, and the 5th Battalion was completely sucked dry. It was milked by taking away almost all of the Indian officers who were there to go and help form other battalions, the 6th Battalion, 7th Battalion, 8th Battalion, 14th. In the end, we had about 10 or 12 battalions of infantry. So when I arrived in Landikotal, brand new second lieutenant, I was met, the Indianized thing had to stop, and they put back the Jemadars and the Subedars and the Subedar Major. They had to reform it as the way it used to be, as the rest of the regiment was. And I arrived, and I was by myself. I was picked up in Peshawar, put on a Pathan bus and sent up the Khyber Pass, sitting in a bus with chickens and people and all that sort of stuff. And I was met by the Subedar Major, who was a very distinguished looking gentleman, a very important person, and probably the most important chap in the whole of the battalion, really. And he was a Pathan, as it happened. My regiment, but just for one moment, my regiment was comprised of a half of the regiment was Punjabi Muslims, a quarter Pathans, also Muslims, and a quarter Dogra Brahmins, very high class Hindus. And it so happened that the Subedar Major was a Pathan. And he greeted me with a very courteous sort of almost bowing arrangement. He could not speak English at all. My Urdu was relatively weak. I had been learning it, but I wasn't terribly fluent. And he greeted me, and he said very words to the effect in Urdu, welcome, Saab, very nice to have you. And he took me off in a tonga, horse and cart thing, to the regiment, which was stationed just a few miles outside of Landikotal, where I had been landed. And I felt I had to make some sort of conversation, so I said to him, Subedar Major Saab, what am I going to be doing when I get to the battalion? And he said to me, well, Saab, and he used his fingers, he said, one, you're going to be B Company Commander, two, Headquarter Company Commander, three, Quartermaster, and four, Animal Transport Officer. Now, I'm 18, and I look at this guy, and I said to him, is that all I'm supposed to be doing, Subedar Major? He said, nay, Saab, no, Saab. He said, you're going to be Vice President of the Mess as well. Now, I thought I was being taken for a ride, but I was not. And that, to my astonishment, absolute astonishment, and great worry that I had all this stuff to do, being a company commander of a rifle company is pretty big stuff. But to be headquarter company commander and the quartermaster and the animal transport officer was staggered me. But I found it was so. And I also found that there were only six other British and Indian commissioned officers in the whole of the regiment. And so I was one who had to do my share of what was going on. And I was absolutely petrified. And what even more frightened me was that the Subedar Major informed me that tomorrow at 8 o'clock there was a regimental inspection to be taken by an officer, and I was deputed to take the inspection. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So I said to him, but I don't know about regimental inspection. I'm only, you know, I didn't know anything very much like it. He said, no, sir. He said, you're the duty officer, and you've got to inspect. It was half of the battalion, that's to say two rifle companies and pipes and drums and things like that. The other two companies were out on pickets up the Khyber Pass, doing their duty. And they had a lot of problems up there at that time. Anyway, he said, no, sir, he said, you've got to do it. Don't worry, I'll tell you what to do. I'll come and pick you up. He said, and you've got an orderly, you've got a batman, and you've got a horse of the size, you know, it's all this stuff. I said, but I can't ride horses. He said, well, march with it. The chap will bring the horse behind you. He said. So 8 o'clock the following morning, I had no sleep that night. I have to confess, I was absolutely petrified. And there was no other officer to be seen, not another single officer. And the Subedar Major picked me up the following morning, and I had an orderly and a batman and a syce, and I was taken out to a big maidan, a big playground. It was a part of the airfield, actually. And he said, pointing to the thing, he said, when the battalion gets up, when the parade comes on, he said, I'll give you a signal, and you march out to where that white cross is, the chalk thing, he said, and you'll stand there, and I will call them to attention, and then I'll come and invite you to respect the troops. So, half of a battalion, 400 soldiers, pipes and drums, all standing, waiting to be inspected. And then he did the signal, and I had to march out. I've never been so frightened. I marched, I got to this white place, I stood there absolutely, really sort of shaking. And the Subedar Major, who was in charge of the parade, he called them to attention, to present arms, and he marched right up to me and saluted, and he said, Saab, how old are you? And I, like a fool, I said, I'm 18. Then he started laughing and shaking with fun and joking, and I thought, oh no, I mean, this is that. And all these soldiers were watching. He could see him giggling. And I thought, well, I had to say something. So I said, Saab, what's funny about that? I'm 18. What's funny about it? He said, Saab, I have been in the regiment for 38 years, and you're 18. Now, you are on parade, you're in charge, he said. And he pulled himself up, and then he bent forward again. And he said to me, Saab, don't worry. Don't worry, Saab. This was in Urdu. Don't worry. He said, we will look after you, Saab. And he turned around, and I had to march with him, and he was, and I had to go all the way down these things, and the soldiers all seen him giggling, and then they saw him standing up, and there was not a murmur either, I think. And you know, that's the most marvellous thing that has ever been said to me, ever, in the whole of my life, because those chaps really, really looked after me. That Subedar Major looked after me like a little boy. He brought me up. He taught me more about being a soldier, more about mountain warfare, more about man management of men than the whole of the cadet college could ever have taught me if I'd been there for 10 years. And it never failed. And he passed this on to all the other soldiers. And the whole thing was just something miraculous. I think that's his more than enough for going on with it, don't you?
Yes. And so this is You're 18 years old, so this
I was going to be 19 fairly soon. But
1941?
Yes, 1941, yes.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, what happened next was that he wasn't joking. I mean, I was B Company commander. I was sent out on operations. We were having a lot of trouble with